It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano.
Hello and welcome to the Good Health Radio Show, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I'm your host, Nick Bayerano. And joining us today is Dr. Robert Bernstein, Vice President of Clinical Affairs at Carina Incorporated and Medical Director of the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic, launching next week on April 12th. If you have any questions, send us an email at kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bernstein. Are you there?
I am, yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to be here, Nick.
Let's see. Across the country, healthcare systems and hospitals are looking for ways to take the best care possible of the communities they serve. Some of these things involve new technology, new processes, and new solutions, which is what we're here to talk about today. So for someone in our community that knows nothing about virtual care, how would you describe it?
Well, I think if we look at, you know, the virtual care program with Good Shepherd, it's, you know, basically, it's a consultation. It's a way for somebody to talk with a family medicine doctor or nurse practitioner, you know, from the convenience of their couch at home or their office space, and they can do that 24 hours, 7 days a week. And so, again, it's kind of a easy, convenient first-step access to care. Sometimes we'll be able to diagnose and treat a minor condition. Sometimes we can help a patient sort out, you know, is this something I should worry about? Is this something I need to get seen now? Or can I follow up with my regular provider? But basically, it's a virtual consultation, essentially.
Wow, that sounds really, really neat. Dr. Bernstein, how does a doctor get into virtual medicine? Is it a specialty that doctors can choose in medical school? Is virtual medicine now becoming a specialty? What do you see on the horizon?
Yeah, I think the way of thinking about it, Nick, it's probably not a specialty within medicine unto itself, but it's an area of medicine that's growing, as you know, certainly as technology grows. So it's a field of medicine that really can be applied in a lot of different specialties. So it's kind of a tool that, you know, doctors and clinicians can add to their toolbox in a lot of different specialties. If you look at some things like dermatology and psychiatry, for example, they've got a fairly good track history and record now of using telemedicine. And you can imagine why, you know, something like dermatology, where you can get images of a rash or skin lesion, it can lend itself well to that, or psychiatry, where, you know, a lot of the assessment and treatment is really conducted through conversation and not hands-on exam. But it's really expanding to a lot of other fields. So, you know, you might think of something like obstetrics, and you say, well, obviously, you know, you're not going to deliver a baby virtually, but what we're starting to see is, you know, they're recognizing maybe they can do some of those prenatal visits remotely without having the patient, you know, potentially travel long distances to come in. So it's really, again, a tool that can be applied in different ways and different specialties. And now what we're starting to see is, you know, as telemedicine becomes bigger, it is getting introduced into medical school curriculum, not so much as a specialty, but again, as a tool for any doctor. And then, you know, as you get into the specialty residency training, I think they're emphasizing more training and getting clinicians comfortable using telemedicine.
Absolutely. So from a consumer's perspective, obviously it seems like it's starting to gain more traction as well, and people are starting to become more comfortable with seeing a doctor virtually. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. You know, just in the time we've done this, I think the awareness of people that this is an option of a way to seek out care, you know, that there's more opportunities to do that has really grown. And I think the other thing that we've seen is, you know, previously a lot of telemedicine, it was, you know, you had to go into a special, you know, clinic or setting where they had the two-way video connection going. But, you know, with technology now and the growth of technology, where now, you know, most everybody has access to kind of those two-way video conferencing capabilities, you know, on their computer at home or on their smartphone, you know, that's really opened up the opportunities for individuals to access care this way.
Very cool. So how long have you been involved in virtual medicine?
You know, I've probably been doing it about 6 to 7 years now with our company. I'm a family physician and kind of did a traditional family medicine practice previously. I started with our company here, Karina, based in Seattle, and we were actually doing house calls. So we were kind of doing, you know, these 40-minute house call visits, very comprehensive. And one thing we realized was a lot of what we were doing, we could probably do the same thing, you know, virtually for a lot of patients. So we kind of moved into from our house calls to what we called virtual house calls. And now, you know, just like with Good Shepherd, we're partnering with hospitals all over the country to help them get their virtual clinics up and running.
Awesome. So I know you probably have a pretty big role as the vice president there, but do you also see patients virtually?
I still do, yeah. I do it as a kind of only part of my job description at this point. But, you know, what I do in my administrative role, I oversee our group of physicians and nurse practitioners. I work on our, you know, clinical guidelines for virtual care. I make sure that the quality of care we're delivering is, you know, really up to a very high standard. And so still seeing patients virtually really helps me do those other things. But probably more importantly, I just really enjoy doing it. You know, it's great to have the contact with the patients and have that interaction. So that's still very much a highlight of my week when I get to do that.
Awesome. So obviously, the relationship building is probably a little bit different than it is if you were in a clinic and had a more formal relationship with the patient, I would imagine. Is that correct?
Right. So, you know, we don't have the advantage of necessarily having that, you know, continuity with a patient where we've, you know, seen them previously or even known them for years or, you know their extended family. But one of the things with our service that we really want to do is make sure that, you know, anytime somebody comes for this care that we're always going to communicate that care back to their primary care doctor, kind of keep everybody on the same page. And that's also why, you know, on average, our visits are about 20 minutes. And one of the reasons for that is, you know, we really have to make sure we understand the past medical history that somebody has, you know, the context of what's going on. So we really take, you know, a comprehensive history, really take the time to understand what's going on right now, and then also take the time to say, you know, here's what we're going to do now. Here's the things you should watch for going forward. You know, here's the things that you need to do in follow-up.
So you're really doing a pretty comprehensive assessment of each of the patients that you're seeing virtually.
Right. And in a lot of ways, you know, you think of it as newfangled technology, and, you know, there's certainly we're using technology. But, you know, one of the things I enjoy about this, and I think a lot of our doctors and nurses who work with us enjoy, is it's almost, you know, kind of old-fashioned medicine in a way that, you know, The diagnosis is often really in talking to the patient, getting the story right, you know, and then making a plan from there. So a lot of our, you know, patients in the virtual clinic often comment where they feel like, you know, it was much more of a comprehensive visit and they got asked a lot more questions and had a lot more education about their condition than they often get, you know, with in-person visits.
Hmm. Well, you're listening to Good Health on KOHU. If you have any questions, please send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Joining me today is Dr. Robert Bernstein, and we've been discussing a new way of caring for people, which is coming to Umatilla and Morrow counties on April 12th, virtual medicine, to be exact. Dr. Bernstein, you recently published an article titled Five Tips to Prepare Any Patient for Their Virtual Clinic Visit, which provides a lot of great information I'd like to talk about. Each of those tips a little bit here. For a newcomer to virtual care, your first tip was be ready to have a conversation. How important is that initial conversation with a virtual provider?
You know, it's important, and that's, I think, what we were just alluding to is, you know, we really want to be comprehensive and get the information we need. I think the other point of that is, you know, as patients or consumers, how you frame this and how you think about it. You know, the other day I was sitting at home and I ordered, you know, new windshield wipers for my car. I ordered some new bike shorts. I ordered a book for my son's class. You know, and I did that all online and it was great. I did it from my chair in my den and, you know, it was great. It was, you know, internet commerce at its best and everything showed up within the next couple of days. I didn't have to go to all those stores. But I think as patients come to this, they don't kind of think of it as another thing they're just purchasing on the internet. Again, it's really a consultation and a conversation. So I think where patients sometimes get frustrated or, don't really use the service optimally is when they come with just the expectation is, oh, I'm just going to call and get this prescription or, just do this and, not really prepared, again, to sit down and have that conversation, that if they're, doing it, when they only have a few minutes, it doesn't work as well. So, again, I think you've got to be prepared in a place where you can sit and talk, have that conversation, have some privacy, and that's the way that, then the outcome of the visit is really that consultation. And if it turns out it's a medicine that you need and we can prescribe, great. But again, it's, not thinking of it so much as, some more just buying something on the internet because it's easy and convenient. We want to bring the easy and convenient, but it's really that conversation and consultation that's important.
So really it's making sure all of you out there that are listening is if you are planning on participating in virtual medicine that you really take the time to prepare and talk with the provider that's on the other line or that you're seeing virtually and make sure that you're willing to spend the time in communicating your symptoms and your issue with that provider, correct?
Correct, right. Okay. And I think, that's where, again, it's nice because we're available 24/7. So again, do it when you've got that block of time and are ready to talk and ready to listen, and then it's going to be, I think, a much more positive experience and better outcomes.
You also shared in your article that patients should be prepared to talk with a virtual provider by making sure they know their medical history. What are some of the things they should be prepared to share?
Right. So again, going to that idea that, we really want to understand the full context of you as an individual, as a patient, certainly understanding, your other previous medical conditions and history is important because it may very much influence, what you're calling about that day. Medications are a big example or previous medicine allergies. So, again, for example, somebody may call for something with just having a cough for, the last week or two, and it may turn out that if we don't ask or you don't mention that you were recently diagnosed with high blood pressure and you were started on a specific medication that turns out can have cough as a side effect, we would hate to miss that. So, in being thorough, it's really useful to have that. So again, collecting things like if you're on current medications, having the names and doses of those nearby, or if you've had any recent illnesses, or again, if you've got a history of diabetes, say, knowing a little information, being ready to share some information about your diabetes and how you're managing it, and how well controlled it is, those would all be important things that we'd want to know in taking care of somebody.
Okay. And that makes perfect sense. I mean, you would definitely want to know, like you mentioned, if somebody's on a medication that causes a cough and the consumer is wanting to be seen for a cough, obviously that's something you would want to know, so you don't misdiagnose somebody or prescribe them something else that maybe might not interact positively with what they're currently taking.
Right, absolutely. And that's why, again, I think, we don't want to have these 4 or 5 minute visits where, okay, you've got a cough, here's a medicine for cough. We really want to, understand in a very broad sense of what's going on and be really thoughtful about it and make sure, again, we're not missing things that could be serious, that would need a higher level of care, and then, really kind of doing our best to understand what's happening now so we can really treat it in the best fashion appropriate.
Obviously, virtual care visit is different than an exam in a doctor's office, which we alluded to a little bit ago as well, but for listeners that may just be tuning in, in your article, you mentioned that patients should keep an open mind. And what exactly should they keep an open mind about?
Yeah, I think, that's one of the things is it is different. And so, one of the issues is it may not be the exact same kind of chain of events if you went in to get seen in person for something. I think a good example for this I often use is, you know, it's Sunday night and you're a parent and your, you know, five-year-old comes into your bedroom at 10 o'clock saying their ear hurts. You know, so the child's in distress, you know, what are you going to do as a parent? You know, if you took them into the emergency room or the urgent care, you know, they would certainly look in their ear. They'd be able to say, you know, they do or don't have an ear infection. You know, they'd potentially kind of put them on antibiotics that night. If instead you called us, you know, at this point we don't have the technology yet where we can look right inside the ear and say whether it's an ear infection or not. But we would be able to say, you know, your child may have an ear infection, but we know from, you know, good research and good studies that diagnosing it tonight, and if it is, putting them on antibiotics tonight, you know, isn't going to make a difference for how well they sleep, how well their pain's controlled, you know, how well you're going to sleep tonight. So, you know, don't go to the emergency room. You know, here's what we're going to do tonight to make sure that the child's comfortable, everybody sleeps well. And then if needed, you know, then we can get you in the next day or the following day, you know, to get that ear looked at and make sure it doesn't need an antibiotic. So again, you know, if you come with the expectation that, oh, it must be an ear infection and I need an antibiotic, it may not go that route. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you're kind of open to saying, okay, you know, did I really need to go in and be seen and really what's the benefit of that? And as it turns out, you know, no, it's probably just inconvenient and expensive to take your child to the emergency room, you know, Sunday night for ear infection. You know, then again, I think you can have a much better outcome and probably save some money in the course of it as well.
Okay. So you also mentioned just right now about the potential for a follow-up, and I know you mentioned that in your article as well. Should patients and customers be prepared for a follow-up?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's kind of a number of kind of scenarios in which, you know, a patient would need to follow up. So just like, you know, when you go to the doctor in person, there's things where they're going to want to see you back. You know, they're going to treat you but say, you know, I want you to come back in 3 days to recheck that, or, you know, come back in 2 weeks. And so there's times that we're going to do that as well. And generally, you know, we don't want to be a patient's primary care provider. We don't want to be their kind of sole go-to source of health care. We want to be there, you know, to support and coordinate with their primary care provider. So most of those follow-ups, we're going to say, let's get that scheduled with your primary care provider, or, you know, in some cases, maybe it's follow-up with a specialist. The other thing that happens a lot for us is, you know, a patient may call with some kind of short-term issue or concern, and we're able to address that in the virtual visit. But in you know, again, getting their comprehensive history and their past history, you know, other medical issues may come up where, you know, we say, oh, you know, you really should go in and, you know, get your thyroid level checked with what you're telling me, or, you know, based on your family history, you should go talk to your primary care provider about, you know, colon cancer screening at your age. So sometimes, you know, in the course of, again, being comprehensive, we're going to identify things that we can't do virtually, but, you know, would be important things for a patient to follow up with their provider as well.
Okay. So it sounds like there potentially are some limits to what you can obviously do. What are some of those limitations that customers should know?
Right. So I think, you know, and it's, you know, if you start to think about it, it's pretty clear. So, you know, we can actually do a fair amount of exam with a virtual visit. You know, in Oregon, we're allowed to do these visits of telemedicine both by phone or with, you know, a video chat as well. It's always nice to see the patient, and when you can see them, you know, you can do more of an exam. You can walk patients through various maneuvers or exams and get a lot of good information that way. But obviously, you know, it's not the same as being there in person, so I can't, you know, actually lay hands on. So there are times where, you know, we're just, again, we're going to need to listen to the heart or listen to the lungs or do a more detailed in-person neurologic exam that we can't do virtually. And those might need to be seen in person, or, you know, if there's certain tests that somebody needs, or, you know, x-rays or imaging. So there are times where, you know, we have to be be able and willing to say, you know, this we can't manage virtually. And so that's important for, you know, patients to recognize and for our providers to recognize, because we don't want to kind of take shortcuts and start taking care of people virtually where it, you know, is not good medicine or puts them at risk. So, you know, I think we just have to be willing to say it's great when it can take care of a problem, but sometimes after we do that consultation, we recognize, you know, it's probably out of the scope of what we can do virtually, and then it's about getting, you know, getting the patient to the right care setting at the right time to make sure they're taken care of.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Good Health on KOHU. If you have any questions, please send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Joining me today is Dr. Robert Bernstein, and we've been discussing a new way of caring for people, which is coming to Umatilla and Morrow counties, which is virtual medicine. I'd like to transition now to the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic, which is launching on April 12th with the Carina Medical Group. Who is a candidate, or I guess who can you see at the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic?
So we can really see everybody. There's some limitations for some government-insured individuals, but you know, as I mentioned before, our providers, our physicians and nurse practitioners are all board certified in family medicine. So we're comfortable seeing kind of the full age spectrum, and again, the full spectrum of conditions. You know, there are certainly things, and a lot of times, you know, common sense is going to guide that, you know, that are lend themselves better to a virtual visit, you know, so conditions like a rash or, you know, kind of simple, uncomplicated coughs and colds. You know, obviously if, you know, somebody, your child fell off the swing and their arm is, you know, at a funny angle and they probably have a broken bone, you know, of course that's not going to make a lot of sense. We're not going to be able to do a lot with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes it's pretty obvious that this would be something that's probably good for virtual care, sometimes not. But, you know, one option is always, you know, you can always start with us if you're not sure. And, you know, if it turns out we kind of quickly recognize, you know, no, this is really not good for virtual care, you know, we'll just quickly get you redirected to the right care setting.
All right. So we did get a question from our listeners, and one of them is, what kind of equipment do you need to be able to make your virtual care visit actually happen?
Yeah, so there's kind of from the clinical part and the technology part. From the technology part, there's actually, we really try to make it easy for patients and consumers. So, again, with telemedicine, the state rules kind of vary from state to state, and some states require you to only do a video visit. As I mentioned, in Oregon, we can actually do it by telephone. So, you know, it can be as simple from the technology standpoint as having a telephone. Again, it's often really nice and helpful to have that video, and that can be done through your smartphone on an app. It can be done. We will use things like FaceTime. You can come in through your laptop or your computer and request a visit. So as long as you have a webcam on there, we've got a program that'll let you make that connection to the doctor or nurse to have that conversation. So, you know, from the technology standpoint, it's nothing really special. It's kind of probably the electronic gadgets and devices you already have. From a clinical standpoint, you know, things that can certainly help. I'd encourage everybody, you know, if you don't already have a basic thermometer in your house, that's a good thing to get, because that's a data point that we often want to know is, you know, is there a fever? What's your temperature? And I'm always surprised how many people don't have a thermometer in their medicine cabinet. You know, for other people, a lot of people have a blood pressure cuff at home to measure their blood pressure. That's great if you have it. In a lot of cases, we don't need it. A flashlight's often helpful, you know, when we're trying to look with a picture or with a webcam at something. That can be really helpful. And then, again, in addition to the video, we also have the ability to have you send us pictures. So, again, either with your phone or a digital camera, having something where you've got, you can take a picture of a rash or the back of your throat, that's real helpful too, to be able to do that and then send those images in so the clinician can look at it.
So it doesn't sound like it's really that complicated. I mean, obviously it sounds like we can use the technology that we have pretty accessible to us immediately, whether it's our smartphone, a tablet, our computer. And you also mentioned in Oregon, people can also call over the phone.
Correct, right. So the idea here is, you know, not to create, a lot of barriers or requirements to be able to access care. So, you know, again, it really goes back to that very first question of, you know, what is this? Well, it's a very, always readily available on-demand way to conveniently and quickly, you know, talk with a clinician.
Sounds great. So the other thing that you mentioned is that people also need to be aware that they need a thermometer, and potentially because you're definitely going to need to know temperature is something that's something you want to know. How about like a blood pressure cuff? Is that something you want to know as well, or not necessarily as important as a thermometer or temperature?
Yeah, I don't think people need to go out and buy blood pressure cuffs to prepare to use the virtual clinic. On the other hand, you know, a lot of people have them, or, you know, if you do have something like high blood pressure that you're managing and treating, I think it's always a good idea to, you know, have the ability to kind of monitor that at home anyway. So again, if we're talking to a patient who has a history of high blood pressure, you know, it's really useful to have that information if you have it. You know, similarly, you know, people with diabetes who have the ability to check their blood sugar, you know, that's a really useful tool as well. So they're not requirements, but again, you know, based on your current medical conditions, there's certainly things to think about.
Okay. So we've touched on several different things that you are able to treat at the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic, but what are some things that we maybe didn't mention already that people that are listening might want to know about?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things that we pretty commonly treat. One of our top diagnoses is, you know, kind of a simple, straightforward bladder infection in women. And, those in your audience who have had them recognize, you know, they kind of come on unpredictably, and it's something that's usually you want to treat pretty quickly. And in a lot of cases, you know, we know there's good medical evidence that when it's uncomplicated and straightforward, we can diagnose and treat that virtually. We know that, for example, in children, when we talk about limitations, you know, children or men, we're not going to be able to treat bladder infections or urinary tract infections. But, you know, for women who commonly get them, that's something we see a lot of. We see a lot of, again, the coughs and colds, how to manage those symptoms. You know, how do we, you know, do you need to worry about having something like pneumonia or more serious condition where you may need to be seen in person? You know, that's where it's real helpful. We can kind of help treat the bothersome symptoms and make sure nothing more serious is going on. I think we talked a little bit about rashes and things. So, you know, in summertime, we see a lot of poison ivy. We don't get it as much, you know, out here in the Northwest, but with some of our other health systems, we get a lot of that. But certainly, you know, bug bites and simple skin infections or other things we commonly treat as well.
Mm. So I know there's going to be a small fee involved with virtual care, roughly the price of a copay. In our case, the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic, it's $35 per visit. Why should someone first consider virtual care instead of emergency care for an urgent medical need?
Yeah, so a couple things. I mean, I think first, you know, again, when you think about $35 to often speak to a clinician for 20 minutes, you know, in the world of healthcare, that's a pretty good value these days. But I think the other reason is, there are times where, again, you know, for most patients, it's the copay or cost sharing, the ER is pretty expensive. And so, you know, if it's something we can take care of and manage, so again, you know, instead of the child with the ear pain, as we talked about, or the woman with the bladder infection, those are things that we can often manage virtually. So it's a more convenient, less costly alternative. But even if we can't manage it, it's often still, I think, real valuable for patients. You know, again, you're not sure if you need to go to the ER, or being able to talk to somebody who says, yes, you know, this is one of these things you really do need to go, you know, then you can go with kind of the reassurance and knowledge that, yes, this is where I need to go. Or other times, again, maybe we can't manage it virtually, but don't go to the ER for that. You know, you could follow up with that. You know, here's what we're going to do today, and then you can follow up with your regular primary care provider, you know, tomorrow or the following day. And, you know, again, that's often going to be much cheaper for the patient than going to the ER. So again, I think there's value there, because sometimes we can just manage it, But even when we can, I think, you know, having access to that advice is patients find that really valuable.
Awesome. So one thing I want to talk to you about, too, is let's say I am a new user to the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic, and I'm logging in and registering. How long does it take once I register to actually see a doctor, typically?
Yeah, so on average, we're pretty quick. You know, like we said, we're 24/7 and on demand. Our average, wait time is probably about 10 minutes or a little under 10 minutes. So it's usually pretty quick. We really kind of almost always get the patients within 30 minutes, and that's what, you know, you'll likely see on the website. There are times where, you know, sometimes kind of very peak hours, it gets backed up a little bit. But even in those situations, we have our own, it's probably worth mentioning, you know, we have, we call them patient concierges, kind of customer service. And there's a phone number, and they're available 24/7 as well. But if for some reason we're backed up and we're not going to get to you in 30 minutes, you know, they're going to reach out to you and check in with you and keep you updated. So, you know, that's the exception. But for most people, you know, it's really kind of, you'll be talking to somebody within 10 minutes in most cases.
Wow, that's really fast. You can't do that in a doctor's office. You definitely most likely are probably not doing that in an ER or an urgent care setting. You're usually having to wait a little longer than that in most cases. Something else I wanted to touch on too is for those of us that are just tuning in and just started listening to the show here. So let's say it's 11 p.m. Saturday night and my daughter walks into my room and says she's not feeling well. Is the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic available to see her?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like we mentioned, we see kind of, you know, full age spectrum, so we're all comfortable seeing pediatrics. And, you know, I think that's a good example, Nick, about, you know, sometimes I think as a parent or, you know, for yourself, you're just not sure what to do or what to worry about. And so those are real common things where, you know, a child has a bellyache or a fever. And in a lot of cases, you know, we may not be able to definitively diagnose what's going on. But we can say, you know, that fever is not worrisome. Here's what, you know, you're going to do to keep her comfortable. Here's what you're going to watch for. You know, these would be kind of the red flag warning signs where we'd want you to call back or go in and get seen. So, again, I think a lot of times, you know, again, what we're really dispensing is, you know, reassurance and knowledge. And, you know, sometimes it's dispensing a prescription. But, you know, we, again, it kind of goes back to that idea of, you know, we really see this as a consultation, and again, not, you know, it's not an internet prescribing service. So I think that's a, you know, that's a great example of where if you're anxious or you're not sure, it's a great way to use the service.
That sounds really great. So for those of us that are listening and we're kind of on the fence about this and we may not be as tech savvy as others, what would you tell somebody that is maybe older, that is a little more apprehensive about virtual care? How would you describe this to them? I know we talked about this a little bit before, but just for people that might just be tuning in, what would you say to them to kind of ease their minds a little bit about actually trying it out?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a pretty low risk thing. You can do it from the comfort of your home. I think, you know, people are always a little nervous about it. But again, our experience has been when patients do it, you know, they really find that they're very engaged with the clinician. It's a very positive experience. You know, it feels very personalized. And so it's a good thing. We don't want technology to be a barrier. So again, that's why we try to create as many technology avenues and pathways as we can. I think the other thing is, as we mentioned, you know, we do have always available our patient concierge. And so if you have a hang-up, you know, with the app or trying to request a visit online, there's an 800 number there you can always call. And, you know, they can do a lot of it, you know, just over the phone, create the visit, you know, get you set up or help you troubleshoot the technology on the phone. So I think that's, you know, that's important to remember, that there's always kind of a warm voice, a real person on the other end as well, not just the clinicians, but with our customer service representatives as well.
So that's really good to know. So if somebody decides to call in and they end up talking to one of your concierges, are they trained to be able to treat the patient, or do they then refer to the doctor, transfer the call kind of a thing, so that way one of your clinicians is able to talk with them?
Right. No, they're not clinically trained, okay. So they're not going to diagnose and treat. And, you know, you can kind of think of them in your doctor's office, you know, the people at the front desk. You don't want them dispensing medical advice to you necessarily. But they can answer questions, you know, about how this works and, you know, if there's kind of coverage or payment issues, you know, just general questions. But obviously, if it's, you know, a specific clinical question, you know, they're not qualified to do that, so they're going to get you connected to the physician or the nurse practitioner for that.
Okay. So I know from probably our more tech-savvy listeners, they're probably wondering, is there going to be an app for this?
Right. I believe Good Shepherd should have an app. And so, again, in that app, you can request the visit. It's got, you know, the built-in video capabilities. You can log back into your account. So if you had prior visits, you can look at those visit summaries. So every time we see a patient and do a visit, we send you a visit summary that, you know, describes your the diagnosis, the treatment recommendations, the follow-up. You know, usually it has some links to some patient education materials. So you can go in through the app and access those visit summaries from prior visits as well. If you need a receipt to submit to your insurance to see if this would be covered, I believe you can access that as well.
Very cool. So, Dr. Bernstein, I know we're running out of time here, but what is something that you would like our community to take away from our discussion today about virtual care?
Yeah, I think to just think of it as, you know, a great opportunity, kind of adding another option within the spectrum of care that you can get. It's not, you know, we're not going to take all medicine and virtualize it. It's good for some things. It's a good starting point sometimes if you're not sure. And then the other piece of that is, you know, we want it to be well coordinated with your primary care provider. And, you know, again, we're not trying to substitute this in for having your regular doctor and having that ongoing relationship. We want to be there to kind of support that and offer this option within that context as well.
Well, Dr. Bernstein, I just want to thank you again for being on the show with us today. Dr. Bernstein is the Vice President of Clinical Affairs at Carina, essentially the medical group that will be seeing patients at the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic when it launches later next week on April 12th. For more information about the Good Shepherd Virtual Care Clinic, visit www.gshealth.org/virtualcare, and that site won't actually be up until April 12th. Thank you again, Dr. Bernstein, for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure, and maybe have the chance to talk with some of the listeners as patients down the road, so look forward to it.
All right, sounds great. Thank you.
All right, take care.